Your kids. All right, we're talking about Pilgrim today. Christian, I call him Pilgrim. His name is Christian. And as we left him last week, he was leaving the valley of the shadow of death. And as he comes out of the valley, he catches up with Faithful. And this is, to me, a big turning point in the story. It's an important part of this story. So I want to reflect for a minute on who Faithful is and what Bunyan is trying to communicate here. Faithful is a fellow pilgrim. He lived in the city of destruction, just like Christian did, and he's on his way to the celestial city. And Christian, you'll notice, actually left first. Christian left first, but Faithful passed him up because Christian stopped at Interpreter's house and Faithful didn't. So the gatekeeper at Interpreter's house says, yeah, another pilgrim went by. That was Faithful, and he's now ahead. So Pilgrim is now catching up with Faithful. And before we get into their interaction, I just want to point out, I think Bunyan is doing something very helpful here to remind us that not every pilgrim has the same experience. The pilgrim life is not the same for everybody. And they are going to go through very different trials, very different blessings, very different experiences. Up to this point, the paths of Christian and Faithful are very different. And I think that's a good reminder for us. That's a helpful reminder for us that God gives us different blessings in different trials. And I'm saying it that way on purpose because we tend to notice other people's blessings and say, why didn't God do that for me? Why didn't Faithful get to stop in Interpreter's house? Christian saw a lot of neat things in Interpreter's house. Why did Faithful not get to get that experience? We look at other Christians and their blessings from God and we're jealous and we say, why didn't God do that for me? But we don't always know their trials. Faithful didn't have to fight Apollyon. He made it pretty easily through the valley of humiliation and he didn't have that ferocious battle with Apollyon. And that helps me sometimes. I look at other Christians and I say, wow, look at the blessing they have from God. And often I don't know the trials that they've been through from God. And that helps me to balance my thinking and to remind me that God's going to work differently with all of us. And he's going to take each of us on our own pilgrim path. And we're going to struggle with different things and we're going to have different experiences. And that's okay. And Christian and Faithful are both pilgrims on the way to the celestial city. And as they meet up, as Christian catches up with Faithful, there's a really interesting situation that happens so fast, you can almost miss it. I didn't even remember it. Maybe I've noticed this before, but it really jumped out at me this time. Christian sees Faithful ahead of him on the road, and he calls out and he says, wait for me. And Faithful says, no, I can't stop. I'm not going to wait for you. I am upon my life. I am in fear of my life, and the Avenger of Blood is behind me. Now that, of course, is a Bible reference, right? And I put in the reading guide, we're not going to go into that today, but this idea about the cities of refuge, and if you commit murder, somebody's going to come to execute revenge, and if you're innocent, you can go to a city of refuge. If you're guilty, they're supposed to kick you out, hand you over to the Avenger of Blood. That's a whole Old Testament context to that. I don't really want to stop and talk through that today. But I want to tell you what happened next. Because Christian says, wait for me. Faithful says, no, I can't stop. I got to keep going. So Christian runs, and Christian actually passes him and gets ahead of him, which is actually kind of funny. He doesn't just run up to Faithful and stop. He runs past him and he gets ahead of him. And Bunyan says why, that Christian is proud. Christian has this sense of vainglory. I'm faster than Faithful. I just caught up with him. I just passed him. And you know what's coming next. Pride goeth before a fall. And Christian literally falls. He trips and he falls. And then Bunyan writes, he could not rise again until Faithful came and helped him up. And there's a really interesting picture there. There's a thought-provoking picture there. Christian is proud. He's proud of his superiority to Faithful, and then he falls. And it's Faithful that actually helps pick him up again. And looking ahead to part two, we're going slowly through part one, which is Christian's story. We're going to spend a few weeks on part two, which is Christiana's story, his wife. And in part two, we find out that Christian had such a big battle with Apollyon in the Valley of Humiliation because of his pride. There have been several hints about this along the way, that Christian has a little bit of a problem with pride. And it's not an accident that that place is called the Valley of Humiliation. That's where he meets Apollyon. That's where he has his big battle. And here's another little taste of that. He falls because of his pride, Bunyan is telling us. And Christian is learning some humility here. And I guess there are lots of applications you could make of this, but it is a reminder to all of us, to something that Bunyan doesn't come out and just hit us over the head with. But he's telling a story here about the dangers of pride, and he's encouraging, like James does, that we would learn to humble ourselves, that if we don't, that God is very able to humble us. And I was kind of reminded, I was reading this week about Paul's thorn in the flesh. McShane, we read through Galatians, and there's this reference in Galatians about Paul being there in sickness. So I was reading a little bit about Paul's thorn in the flesh. And in 2 Corinthians, Paul tells us why God gave him the thorn in the flesh. I'm going to read 2 Corinthians 12:7, "Lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh." Now, it's the messenger of Satan to buffet me, but it's also lest I should be exalted above measure. And Paul seems to be saying, because of his unique gifts and abilities and calling, there was a temptation to pride there. And his thorn in the flesh is actually a protection. It's a help from God. It's a pain, but it's a divine help from God to keep Paul humble, to keep Paul, can I say it this way, from ruining his ministry through pride. It was actually, in a sense, a blessing from God. And that's thought-provoking. Do you have something in your life that seems like a thorn in the flesh? And I'm sure it would be different for everybody, but there might be something in your mind and you say, this is really a hard thing, really a painful thing in my life. It's helpful to reflect on the idea that God might actually be protecting me from myself. That's what he's doing here in Paul's case. He's saying, Paul, if this pride thing got out of hand, it would ruin your ministry. You really can't go there. You need to be held back, and this thorn in the flesh is the thing that's going to save you from yourself. But I want to say quickly that that's not the only reason people get sick. You don't look at somebody who's sick and come to conclusions about why they are sick and what God's doing in their life. There are lots of Bible reasons why people get sick. It is sometimes because of sin. It is sometimes because of pride. But just this week in McShane, we read about this man that was born blind. And the disciples said, who sinned, him or his parents? And Jesus said, there's no sin in this picture. It's not the reason for this man's blindness. I'm going to do something special in his life. I'm going to show my glory. And that's the only reason that this man is blind. So we don't look at other people and say, he's sick, he must be proud. He's sick, he must be a sinner. That is wrong thinking. But it's appropriate to look at my own life and say, why do I have this thorn in the flesh? Maybe God is actually trying to protect me. Maybe God is doing this for my good. Maybe there's something that God is keeping me from. So this seems to be a flaw in Christian's character, and God is working on it. He's working on Christian and his pride. That's what the Valley of Humiliation was all about. And Faithful is going to help him with that. So Christian and Faithful now are good friends, and they're traveling along together, and Christian says, okay, tell me your story. And the first question he asks is, what's going on back home? back in the city of destruction. And this brings to mind a trial that's in Christians' life that we might easily forget about. And that is that Christian has a wife and Christian has a family. And he has not forgotten about them. They are very much on his mind and on his heart. And this is a hard thing. This is part of Christian's trial that he's having to bear, that his wife did not come with him. His family did not come with him. And they're on his mind. So he says, what's going on back at home? And particularly he asks about the man Pliable. And Faithful says, well, he has, since his going back, been held greatly in derision. Everybody is making fun of Pliable. And Christian is a little bit surprised. Shouldn't he be a hero? Isn't that what everybody wanted? It's the pilgrims they make fun of, right? He should be a hero because he came back. And Faithful says, no, he's not a hero. Nobody respects him. Everybody's laughing at him. And I just said it this way in my own words. People may laugh if you're a Christian, but they also might secretly respect your courage. But if you give in because of their laughter and do what they want and not do what a pilgrim should do, they will lose respect. That will not gain you the respect of the world. That's what I'm trying to say. To give in to the world is not going to get you the respect of the world. It will make you the laughingstock of the world. That's one of the lessons we're supposed to learn from Pliable. You're embarrassed that people are laughing at you. Well, just go along with them and everything will be fine. No. It won't be fine. They will laugh at you the more. And then, Faithful mentions that he ran into this lady named Wanton. And here I kind of wish we could have a whole lesson, because here is a great life lesson. Wanton, who had like to have done me mischief. And I want to stop and reflect on that a minute. Wanton is the strange woman of Proverbs. Wanton is a sexual temptation for Christians. And the story here is not that Christian goes astray looking to get into trouble and seeks out this wicked woman. The story is that this wicked woman comes and encounters him and intends to do him mischief, intends to trip him up. And it is my observation, especially when I think about preachers who get in moral trouble. And I've lived long enough that I've seen personal examples, too many, of preachers that I know that have gotten in moral trouble. And my observation is, it's almost never because they woke up one day and said, I'm going to go pursue sin. I'm going to go look for this. I'm going to go astray. It's either because they stumble into it, like David did. He's out on his rooftop one day, and he just happens to see Bathsheba, and there's the temptation, and he succumbs to it. Or Bunyan mentions Joseph's example. The trouble actually comes looking for you. There's this woman. There's this Potiphar's wife. And she is aggressively pursuing Jacob. Joseph. She is aggressively pursuing Joseph. And she is chasing him. And she is tempting him. And I think that's what Bunyan is referring to here. This lady wants to do me mischief. And I caution everybody, especially the men in the room, you can read a story like that and you can say, I would never do that. I would never go seeking a relationship like that. And Bunyan puts before us the question, what if a relationship like that chases you? What if there's a wicked woman who intends to do mischief to you? Are you ready for that kind of temptation? And that's why Joseph stands out in our minds, because he withstands a very aggressive temptation. You cannot think, Faithful says, what a flattering tongue she had. And there's a caution here, and I think Bunyan is presenting this wisely, that this is not just a temptation to be avoided. This is a temptation that comes looking for you. And you better be ready for the day that wanton shows up in your life intending to do you mischief. And there's an interesting exchange. Faithful says, she promised me all manner of content, all manner of pleasure. And Christian says, no, she didn't. She didn't promise you a clean conscience. And I think that's a helpful thought in a moment of temptation. Not just this sin, but do you struggle with some kind of sin that you do over and over again? And somehow you talk yourself into it every time. And you know, as soon as it's over, I shouldn't have done that. But somehow, in the moment of temptation, you're tempted to do it again. And Bunyan is saying, why don't you fast forward in your mind to how your conscience is going to feel? Is your conscience really going to be okay with this? Especially, you've been down this road before, and every time you do this, every time you say that, every time you go there, every time you do that, your conscience feels bad. Right, that's telling you something. That's God trying to give you a lever here to back off on the temptation. This is not going to work out well for your conscience. I think that's a helpful piece of dealing with temptation, that you're going to have to live with your conscience. There is pleasure in sin for a season, but there's no way to fix your conscience, and you're going to have to deal with that. I think that's a really insightful thing that Christian says. She didn't promise you everything. She cannot promise you a clean conscience. So how was Faithful able to resist this temptation? And he tells us, Faithful says, I remembered an old writing. That's a funny way to say it. I remembered a Bible verse, right? What was that old writing? Bunyan gives us the reference, Proverbs 5:5, her steps take hold on hell. And there's a parallel, Proverbs 9:17. The foolish woman says, stolen waters are sweet, bread eaten in secret is pleasant. She's made her bed very attractive, it looks very appealing, but he doesn't know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell. Can you picture that in your mind? Here's this bedroom that looks so attractive, and there are literally skeletons in the closet. There are dead bodies there. That back door is the doorway to hell. If we could look at that temptation and see that, that would be so helpful. When I told this story last fall, and I'm going to tell it again, some of you heard this story, but I have a picture in my mind that just perfectly illustrates this. I'm trying to learn Korean. I come across these Korean words I want to add to my vocabulary, and sometimes I'm not sure exactly what they mean. So I figured out a little trick. If you look up a word in the dictionary and you're not sure exactly, especially when you have two words and they're very similar and you can't figure out what's the difference between, I came across these two words for a tomb. Two different Korean words for a tomb. And I wanted to know, what's the difference? There's got to be some different shade of meaning here. So one of my tricks is to go to Google Images and put in that word and see pictures of it. And it became obvious as soon as I did that, one of these is what we would call a coffin. One of these is the word for a tomb. One of these is the word for a coffin. The pictures made that obvious. So I typed in the word that means a coffin. And here's this screen full of all of these boring pictures of coffins. But there's one of them. Here's this wooden coffin, and sitting on top of it is a barely dressed lady. Provocative lady sitting on top of this coffin. And I thought, what in the world? That is so strange. That is so jarring. That is so incongruous. You know, that's not attractive. That doesn't make me want to go buy a coffin. I have no idea where that picture came from or who did it. I don't really care. I'm not going to go find where the picture came from and see what's going on. But it was one of the most jarring things I've seen in a long time. Here's this half-naked lady sitting on top of a coffin. And I don't know what the point of that was, but I thought, you know, we would have less of a problem with pornography if there was always a coffin in the picture. That's exactly what Solomon is saying. You're looking at some image that's tempting you morally, and Solomon says, don't you understand the dead are there? Don't you understand there's a coffin in the picture? Don't you understand this is literally a pathway to hell? And that's actually been kind of helpful to me. When you see something like that, you can mentally just put a coffin in the picture. Just include that in your concept of this is what I'm looking at here. And I think some of those things would be a lot less tempting. So, Faithful, what did Faithful do? This thought comes to his mind. There's this ancient writing, the dead are there. Her steps take hold of hell. So what does Faithful do? I love what comes next. Faithful says, so I shut my eyes. I just shut my eyes. I just looked away. I just didn't look. And Bunyan references Job 31. Job said, I made a covenant with my eyes. I'm not going to look. And that's really the bottom line. And that comes fast in Pilgrim. But that is a great presentation of how you handle that kind of temptation. Bunyan just laid it all out for you and gave us a great illustration of how you handle that kind of temptation. And then I'm going to make the same point that Christian didn't encounter wanting. These two men are having different experiences, and this was apparently a big temptation and a big crisis for Faithful, and maybe not so much for Christian. Christian has his own problems. That's part of what's going on here. Okay, let's go on, so we don't have much time. Faithful runs into Wanton, and he successfully gets past her, and then he runs into this curious character, this very aged man. And his name is Adam the First, and he has three daughters, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, and he's from the town of Deceit. And as I understand it, Adam the First is our old man. Adam the First is our old nature, our flesh, that we've talked about before in this class. But why does he come from the town of Deceit? And that's a very wise choice on Bunyan's part. Why does the flesh live in the town of Deceit? Because Adam the First makes lots of promises to Faithful, but those promises are lies. And it's interesting that these come together, because that's just what was going on with Wanton. Wanton was making promises to Faithful, but those promises are lies. I would say Wanton, I think, lives in the town of Deceit too, because she's making these glowing promises, but there's coffins there. The dead are there. This is all deceptive. This is a lie. And the old man, his promises are lies. And Faithful sees through his lies, because Faithful says, I realized that if I went with him, and Faithful was tempted to go with him, and that's going to be a problem, but Faithful says, I realized if I went with him, when he got me home, he would make me a slave. He seems to be promising the good life, but if you go that way, you're headed for slavery. And what a biblically accurate description of the flesh. It promises you the good life, right? Just watch March Madness and watch all those commercials. And the appeal is, this is the good life. Go this way and you will have a good life. And Bunyan is saying, do you not understand? That's a path to slavery. If you do what they're suggesting, if you live the life that they're suggesting, it's not the good life, it's a life of slavery. He would sell me for a slave. Now, Bunyan doesn't give us a cross-reference here, so let's supply one. Is that a Bible idea? Where did this come from? You're headed to slavery if you go that way. Any Bible verse comes
Romans
to mind?
6.
Romans 6 is exactly right. Don't you know that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants you are, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness? Paul is saying, actually, you're going to be somebody's slave. You can be a slave of the king of the celestial city, or you can go slave for Adam the first, but you're going to be a slave either way. So that's the deception of the flesh. And then these go together. There is this swift runner who comes running up the path. If you can picture this, what Bunyan is painting here, it's an intriguing picture. Begs to be, you know, acted out in real life. A swift runner comes running up the path and knocks Faithful to the ground. Knocks him over. And who is that swift runner?
Moses.
That swift runner is Moses. And why did Moses come running after Faithful and knock him down? Did you notice this? Faithful says, because I had a secret inclining for Adam the first. Christian said, did you get away from Adam the first? And Faithful says, well, kind of. I didn't go with him. And Bunyan doesn't explain. If you read that, maybe you were a little puzzled about that. You got away from him. You didn't go with him. What do you mean? There's still a problem. And now we find out. Faithful didn't go with Adam the first, but he wanted to. He wanted to. Can you relate to that? I haven't given in to the flesh because I know it's wrong, but I want to. I secretly want to. And Bunyan is telling us what happens in that situation. Moses, the law, comes and knocks you over with, I'm going to say, a sense of guilt. We are guilty because we want to, not because of an evil act that we did, but we feel guilty because there's something inside of me that is attracted to that and wants to go there, and we feel guilty about it. I think that's what Bunyan is trying to illustrate here. It's the law, it's our conscience, it's our sense of right and wrong that comes and can just knock us out flat with a sense of guilt, not because of an evil action that we did, because of something inside of me that wants to go the wrong way. And Faithful begs for mercy, and Moses says, I don't know how to show mercy. And there's some food for thought. There's some real insight into the weakness of the law. There's some of Paul's theology coming through. Moses doesn't know how to show mercy. But then somebody comes along who is able to make Moses go away. And who is that? That's Jesus. That's the Lord of the celestial city who has the holes in his hands and his side. And there's free from the law. Oh, happy condition. It's kind of a bubbly, happy, bouncy song. Do you think those are kind of, I don't know, over-the-top, exaggerated words, free from the law, oh, happy condition? Not if you've been knocked down by the law. Not if you've had that profound sense of guilt, that there's really something deeply, profoundly wrong with me, and there's no hope for mercy, and then you realize the truth of the gospel, that you are actually free from all of that. That's what's going on here. And Bunyan is trying to tell us that the old nature and the law are both things that you need deliverance from. And we talked about this in the previous week. Part of what helps me is to recognize that maybe I am secretly attracted to sin, but that's the old me. That's my old nature that's secretly attracted to sin, and that's not the new me. And it's what Christian told Apollyon. Apollyon said, you're my servant. And Christian said, not anymore. I used to be, but I have a new master. That's the old me. That's my old life. I'm not going to feel guilty about that because God has delivered me from that. Did you read through Galatians this week? McShane fit great this week because we went through Galatians and Paul's talk about the law. And I was struck by how forcefully Paul said, don't get circumcised. He's telling these Gentile Christians, don't do it. Don't go get circumcised. Because this is not just about circumcision. If you think you really have to be circumcised, then you just signed up for the whole law. You start down that road, you're going to have to keep the whole thing. Circumcision is just the start of a road that you don't want to go down, because there's no mercy on that road. And you're going to have to keep the whole law, and that's not just going to work. So Paul says strongly, don't even start down that road. Don't be thinking, I'll just get circumcised and I'll make the Judaizers happy. And no, if you open that door, you just signed up for the whole package of the law. And that is not what's going to take you where you want to go. All right, so then Christian says to Faithful, did you not meet anybody in the Valley of Humility? Who was it the Christian met there? Apollyon. Did you meet anybody in the Valley of Humility? Oh, well, he didn't meet Apollyon, but he did meet this guy called Discontent. And Discontent has a bunch of friends. And this is the lesson to me in Discontent. Discontent is connected with pride, arrogancy, self-receipt, self-conceit, and worldly glory. Can you connect the dots in your mind? Discontent, what's that? You ever discontent? Do you ever look at your life and your circumstances and your situation and you say, I don't like this. I am not content with where I am and what I have and what's going on. And Bunyan says, stop and think about where that comes from. Stop and think about what that's connected to. Discontent comes from a root of pride and arrogancy and self-conceit and worldly glory. We are discontent because of what we think we deserve, because of who we think we are, because of what we think we ought to have. And that's the point that Bunyan's trying to make here. If you are feeling discontented, it's time for a checkup about pride, which seems to be, again, something that Christian is struggling with. So, Faithful ran into Discontent, and that's a very brief encounter, and then he runs into a man named Shame. Bunyan has a fascinating description. He says Shame seems to bear the wrong name because he's very bold. You would think that Shame would be shy and retiring and hiding off in a corner, but no, Shame is very bold. And he comes to Faithful, and he has some arguments why he should not be walking this path, why he should not be a pilgrim to the celestial city. He says, number one, have you noticed? Not very many mighty people, not very many rich people, not very many wise people go this way. I've been watching pilgrims, and they're a sorry lot. None of the great people of the world go this way. Not very many wise, not very many rich, not very many mighty. You don't want to go this way. Look who goes this way. That's his first argument. His name is Shame, right? You're going to be embarrassed if you become a Christian, because that's a bunch of losers. You're associating yourself with a bunch of losers. In fact, he says, going this way drives you away from those kind of people, forces you in the company of lowly people. You go this way, you're just associating with the wrong people. And then I've noticed this, ignorant people who don't understand natural science. An interesting thing for Bunyan to say a long time ago. This is one of the things potentially to be ashamed about. Are you ashamed to be a Christian? Are you ashamed of the fact that you're a scientific outcast? That people are going to say to you, you are just clueless about science. That's one of the things Shame is saying here. And then this, if you go this way, it will make you do embarrassing things. This will lead you to do embarrassing things. Like what? Like ask forgiveness. How embarrassing. You know how those Christians act they go around confessing that they've made mistakes and asking people's forgiveness. How embarrassing. How shameful. It's really an interesting conversation. And Faithful starts to feel ashamed until he remembers again a Bible verse. And we're going to end with this. We're out of time. Luke 16:15. That which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God. Faithful realizes, I don't care what other people think. What I want to know is what God thinks. Hey, the whole world is going to maybe look down on me and criticize me and make fun of me, and I might be tempted to be ashamed until I remember that there is that celestial city at the end of the road, and my master is there, and I want to know what does he think. I don't want to be ashamed then. That's a good way to think about this. You want to be ashamed now? You want to be ashamed then. Faithful says, I'll take some embarrassment now, because when I stand at the gates of the celestial city, I don't want to be ashamed then. That's a very helpful thought. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for the insight that you gave this man and for the abilities that you gave him to write these things down in a way that have shaped so many people's lives. Thank you for how he draws us back to your word over and over again and brings to our mind these truths from your word. Help us to learn this week and each week as we consider this thing. Help us as we faithfully read our Bibles that we will be not ashamed when we stand before you at the end of our life. Help us to be faithful pilgrims this week. In Jesus' name, amen. That's right, there is no Sunday school next week. It is Easter. Yeah.